My sermon today is entitled, The Courage to Do What is Right. A pastor once saw little Johnny in the hallway. And he asked little Johnny, do you know where little boys go if they don't put their money in the collection plate? And little Johnny looked up at him, smiling, and said, yes, pastor, they go to the movies. Now, I suppose you could say that it took a little courage for Johnny to say that to the pastor, but probably not. Most kids don't have that kind of filter. But saying what we truly think, or what we think is right, is not always the easiest thing to do. I know I'm not telling you anything new, but in many ways, it's a lesson that needs to be relearned from time to time. Today in our Old Testament reading, we begin a series of continuous readings from the book of Exodus, a story that most of us grew up with. If we went to Sunday school, we heard it probably every year in Sunday school, or the various stories that make up the book of Exodus. A story that perhaps long captured your imagination. And it's easy to believe that we don't need to learn anything, or there's no new learning for us in the book of Exodus or this story today, because we've heard it all so many times before. But I will confess to you that in all my years as a pastor, every time I come back to a passage, often there are a lot of new things to learn. For one thing, there is a great amount of humor in our passage today. Did you get it? Well, I'll come back to that and tell you what it is later. But the story we pick up is there was a Pharaoh who did not know Joseph, the son of Jacob, who was sold into slavery and then saved Egypt from the famine, and his family came down and he saved them, and so forth. Well, Joseph's been forgotten. Now, this could be because Joseph came long, or this Pharaoh came long after Joseph. Or it could be Pharaoh who did not believe that a foreigner should be the grand vizier of Egypt. Whatever the reason, from these ominous words, we know that something is about to change. And it's probably not going to be good for the ancient Hebrews. The Pharaoh and the people of Egypt are afraid. If you look through at any oppression long enough, you will see that there's always a stream of fear in it. They were afraid that the Israelites were getting to be too many in number, and so they would become so large and take over Egypt. So the Pharaoh speaks with the midwives and tells them to kill the boys and save the girls. Now, the midwives have Hebrew-sounding names, Shiphrah and Puah. But we don't know if they were Israelites or Jewish people, Hebrew people. But they cannot do what the Pharaoh is asking them to do. Midwives were a part of the healing profession, and they could not kill a life that they had vowed to save. And Pharaoh calls them in when he sees that there's no change in the numbers. The little boys are still being born and living. Now we have to imagine there's some time between when he told the midwives to kill the boys and save the girls, and when he realizes nothing's happening. The numbers are still growing. And so he calls these midwives in. He says, what's going on? And they say, they make up this tale that the Hebrew women are so healthy and strong that they have the babies born before the midwives can get there. So at that point, Pharaoh says to the Egyptian, kill the boys, save the girls. And it's in this kind of situation that Moses is born. And I would imagine that his mother could not bear to see her son being killed or dying. So she puts him in a basket and sets him afloat on the river. But she does tell her daughter, Moses' sister, to follow and just see what happens to the basket. Well, Pharaoh's daughter is coming down to the river. She sees the basket, has one of her slaves pull it out, looks in, and sees the little boy, and takes him as a son. And the Moses' sister, who's been following, comes up and in a moment of inspiration says, would you like for me to find a nursemaid for you, for this baby? And Pharaoh's daughter said, yes, I would. So the child is given back to his mother to be nursed and raised, and she's paid for it. Wouldn't you like to have gotten paid for raising your own children? Now you see the humor in the passage. Pharaoh wanted the boys killed because he saw them as a threat of a future army that could rise up and take over Egypt. But he was being outwitted by the women in the story. They were the ones who were putting the wrench in his attempts at ethnic adjustment. Mark Kirschbaum, a medical doctor in the Department of Hematology and Stem Cell Transplantation, wrote on the Jewish website a number of years ago, www.tikkun.org, about what he saw as the reason for the Pharaoh's command to kill the boys and save the girls. He said, Hasidic commentators examined this strange edict to save the female children and let the male children die. The Shem Nishumel notes that upon Pharaoh's discovery of the survival of the male children, he asked, what have you done? A strange question, because what is being questioned is seemingly what the midwives didn't do. That is, kill the children. And he answered that what they did was to imbue the mothers and children with revolutionary ardor and joy. They were outwitting Pharaoh, as we will see later. But we can also understand that what the midwives also did was to give the children medical care. They made live the children. In other words, Pharaoh was exercising an early instance of biocontrol. The girls were to be allowed health care and thus survival, whereas the boys were to be banned, excluded, and thus left to die. and Pharaoh's surprise at what was done for the male children when his decree was that nothing be allowed to be done for them. Support for Bible-controlled reading of this passage is also found in the fact that it was specifically to the healthcare providers, the midwives. Pharaoh turned to in the first place, only calling upon his people to murder the children in the later verse when his approach failed. Once the power of biocontrol is acknowledged, much of the Hasidic readings of this passage fall into place. Why only the males? Pharaoh wanted the males to disappear so that the females would be forced to breed with the Egyptians, and thus this separate people would be eradicated. One could imply that Pharaoh was turning Goshen into an ethnic breeding camp, or worse. So it's quite possible that Pharaoh has something even more sinister in mind than just killing boys. And there's another interesting observation to make as well. Where is God in this passage? There's no mention of God in this section. God did not tell these women what to do. They had the courage to do what is right. And out of that, the father of the Jewish faith was born and saved. Reverend Barry J. Robinson, a number of years ago, in a sermon entitled Keeping the Faith in Babylon, shares the following story and thoughts. A Zen master was invited to a great Catholic monastery to instruct the monks who resided there in the practice of Zen. The holy man exhorted the monks to meditate constantly and to try to solve their koan, or Zen, mystery with great energy and zeal. He told them that if they practiced with full-hearted effort, true understanding would come to them. But you must really put your hearts into it, he said. All the monks listened attentively and smiled politely. Finally, one old monk raised his hand and said, Master, our way of prayer is a little different than yours. We have been meditating and praying in the simplest fashion without effort. For we believe that a person must wait instead to be illumined by the grace of God. Is there anything in Zen about this illumination that comes from doing nothing, that comes to a person uninvited? The Zen master, when he heard this, laughed out loud, and he said, My dear fellow, the reason we Buddhists put so much effort into prayer is because we believe that God has already done enough. God has already done enough. Christians, it seems, have a fondness for stories in which God does things. You know, stories where God gets into the act, or makes God's self known, or gives people clear and precise directions about the kinds of things that God wants done. You think about a lot of our prayers. It's about wanting God to do something, God to act in a certain way. God spoke to Moses out of the burning bush, for example. Go tell Pharaoh to let my people go. We like the stories like that. God tells us what to do. And when Moses begins to doubt that Pharaoh will listen to him, God says, when that that happens, just throw that staff that you've got there down on the ground. That should knock his socks off. In other words, stories where God seems to get into the action, making sure things get done, adding a little chutzpah, as I talked about last week, of God's own for good measure. A hands-on kind of God. We like those stories. We like it when God makes things clear. But you see, in our Exodus passage today, God doesn't make things clear. God doesn't even speak. Each of these people act on their own ideas of what is right and good. Each of them took a big risk to do the right thing. And God was able to use it to bring about the rest of the story, as we will see as we go through the coming weeks. But I will suggest to you that what they did, while it was courageous, it really wasn't a lot. Jermaine Greer, an Australian-born writer, academic, journalist, and scholar of early modern English literature, widely regarded as one of the most significant feminist voices of the latter part of the 20th century, shared the following. Perhaps catastrophe is the natural human environment. And even though we spend a good deal of energy trying to get away from it, we're programmed for survival amid catastrophe. All of us can have the power and the courage to do the right thing. It's not something relegated to a few. In fact, when we build others up by saying things like, oh, they really did a good thing and I could never do that. I don't have it in myself to do that. Aren't we just scapegoating ourselves? We do have it in us. It's not a lot. It might not be easy, but it's not a lot. As the author of Micah says, when the prophet asked, how should one come before God? Do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God. We have been told what is right. That's what the whole life of Christ is about. That's what the teachings of Paul is about. God's blessing of life gives us the courage to do what is right. Now we just have to have the will to do it. Amen.